This episode of the Memory Palace is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. This is the Memory Palace. I'm Nate DeMeo. A quick stroll through Lafayette Square, located just across the street from the White House. Presidents have been able to see it from northern windows since it was formally dedicated in 1824. Before that, it was a racetrack. And, we are told, a market where people bought and sold other people. But then they made it a park. First, just a field and some apple trees. Then they put up a little fence, just high enough to keep cows from wandering in, and to distinguish it as a park. A green place in which to walk or play or picnic. An open space which folks were free to use as they saw fit, to fill with the stuff of life. They put up its first statue in 1851. It is of Andrew Jackson on horseback. It was the first equestrian public sculpture in America, and it established a trend of placing bronze racists on bronze horses that was a time-honored tradition for a long time. They planted spreading oaks and London plane trees and black lampposts along crisscrossing paths with room for benches and triangular flower beds. The lamps used to be gaslit, used to cast flickering shadows in which lovers would meet. And there is a story about the son of Francis Scott Key, who used to meet up with the wife of a congressman in those shadows, until that congressman saw him sitting on a bench and shot him in broad daylight. But I don't care about that story right now. I care, on this June afternoon, about the uses of this park over the years, and the freedom public parks can provide. I care about how in the 1890s, gay black men and transgender women held what they called an annual drag race, when they would wear dresses and jewelry and beautiful hats and parade through the city and dance in Lafayette Square. Washington, D.C. was one of the American cities most open to gay people back then, as it was in the 1930s, when the federal bureaucracy expanded and they needed people to fill positions in the Works Progress Administration and the Social Security Administration and the Homeowners Loan Corporation and all that. Historians tell us that some unknowable but large number of gay women and men seized the opportunity to take a civil service exam that would allow them to leave home where so many didn't feel wanted or safe. And they came to D.C. from their towns and their cities to change their lives. And in Lafayette Square Park, among the flowers and the elms, the heroic statuary, they would find each other. And the park was the center of gay life in the district until the 1950s, when Joe McCarthy waged his crusade against communism and subversion and dissent, while the Eisenhower administration began to purge homosexuals and suspected homosexuals from the ranks of the government. And the police started a campaign of harassment and violence targeting gay people in Lafayette Park. In the 19-teens, Alice Paul and the National Women's Party set up their headquarters on the edge of the square. They wanted to be close to the White House, right where the action was, so they could better lobby President Wilson to support voting rights for women. And when he wouldn't take their meetings, they took to the park and picketed every day in full view of the president. Protested like William Thomas, a truck driver and carpenter who found in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount a calling. And in June of 1981 began a vigil in Lafayette Square, calling for nuclear disarmament. He was joined later that summer by Conchita Picciotto, and the two of them maintained their protest in a tent in the square across from the White House, through the heat of summer and cold of winter, summer after summer, and winter after winter, until their deaths, his 28 years later, hers 35 years later, when the torch of protest was picked up by other activists who continued to demand change in the park outside the president's window. The park where many hundreds of citizens, protesters and journalists, clergy, gathered on an afternoon in June to peaceably call for an end to police brutality and state violence, and were marched on by men with shields who swung batons and elbows and fired rubber bullets and tear gas on the order of their government so their president could appear in a photograph. Thank you. This episode of The Memory Palace is produced by me, Nate DeMeo, with research assistance from Eliza McGraw. The show gets engineering assistance from Elizabeth Aubert, and it is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX. We are a collective of independent artists and business owners. Stay safe, take care of each other. I'll talk to you soon.
Radiotopia.